den Richtlinien so vorgenommen worden sind, wie wir das für richtig halten. Das heißt,
Hey, Billy, why do you look so down?
Aw, Dad, I got a computer, a PlayStation, and a barn full of iguanas, and I'm still bored.
Gee, Billy, when I was your age, I would read lots of stories in pulp magazines. Oh, with stories of weird adventure and fantasy, horror, satire, and lots of action.
Wow, that sounds great, Dad.
Yeah, I sure wish there was something like that right now.
There is, Daddy-O!
Who are you?
I'm Dr. Mary Von Rocksprocket, host of the Twisted Pulp Radio Hour. And now there's...
Yeah?
Twisted Pulp Magazine!
What's that, Doctor?
Why, it is a return to greatness! Available on all your digital devices! That is what it is! Look!
This looks awesome!
Exciting and, dare I say it, very unwholesome.
You definitely have that right, my good man.
Thanks, Dr. Mary.
My pleasure, Billy. And just between you and me, I am not sure that this man is really your father. Bye.
Dad?
Just read your Twisted Pulp magazine, Billy.
Twisted Pulp magazine! Available in dark alleyways behind meth labs everywhere, or at Amazon.com or archaicmedia.info. That is archaicmedia.info.
Levitation by Joseph Payne Brennan. Read by Wesley Critchfield. Morgan's Wonder Carnival moved into Riverville for an overnight stand, setting up its big tents in the ballpark on the edge of the village. It was a warm evening in early October, and by 7 o'clock a sizable crowd had made its way to the scene of the raucous amusement. The traveling show was neither large nor particularly impressive for its type, but its appearance was eagerly welcomed in Riverville, an isolated mountain community many miles from the motion picture houses, vaudeville theaters, and sports arenas situated in larger towns. The natives of Riverville did not demand sophisticated entertainment. Consequently, the inevitable fat lady, the tattooed man, and the monkey boy kept them chattering animatedly for many minutes at a time. They crammed peanuts and buttered popcorn into their mouths and drank cup after cup of pink lemonade, and got their fingers all but stuck together from trying to scrape the paper wrappers off the colored taffy candies. Everyone appeared to be in a relaxed and tolerant state of mind when the barker for the hypnotist began his spiel. The barker, a short, stocky man wearing a checkered suit, bellowed through an improvised megaphone, while the hypnotist himself remained aloof and at the rear of the plank platform erected in front of his tent. He appeared disinterested, scornful, and he scarcely deigned to glance at the gathering crowd. At length, however, some 50 souls had assembled in front of the platform, and he stepped forward into the light. A murmur went up from the crowd. In the harsh overhead electric glare, the hypnotist made a striking appearance. His tall figure, thin to the point of emaciation, his pale complexion, and most of all his dark, sunken eyes, enormous and brilliant, compelled immediate attention. His dress in a severe black suit and archaic black string tie added a final Mephistophelian touch. He surveyed the crowd coolly, with an expression betraying resignation and a kind of quiet contempt. His sonorous voice reached to the far edge of the throng.
I will require one volunteer
from among you," he said, "if someone will kindly step up." Everyone glanced around, nudged his neighbor, but nobody advanced toward the platform. The hypnotist shrugged.
"There can be no demonstration," he said in a weary voice, "unless one of you is kind enough to come up. I assure you, ladies and gentlemen, the demonstration is quite harmless, quite without danger."
He looked around expectantly, and presently a young man elbowed through the crowd toward the platform. The hypnotist helped him up the steps and seated him in the chair.
"Relax," said the hypnotist. "Presently you will be asked, and you will do exactly what I tell you."
The young man squirmed on his chair, grinning self-consciously toward the crowd. The hypnotist caught his attention, fixing his enormous eyes on him, and the young man stopped squirming. Suddenly, someone in the crowd threw a large ball of colored popcorn toward the platform. The popcorn arced over the lights and landed squarely atop the head of the young man sitting in the chair. He jerked sideways, almost falling off the chair. And the crowd, quiet a moment before, guffawed boisterously. The hypnotist was furious. He turned scarlet and literally shook with rage as he glared at the crowd.
"Who threw that?"
he demanded in a choking voice. The crowd grew silent. The hypnotist continued to glare at them. At length, the color left his face and he stopped trembling, but his brilliant eyes remained baleful. Finally, he nodded at the young man seated on the platform, dismissing him with brief thanks, and then turned toward the crowd.
"Due to the interruption," he announced in a low voice, "it will be necessary to recommence the demonstration with a new subject. Perhaps the person who threw the popcorn would care to come up?"
At least a dozen people turned to gaze at someone who stood half in shadow toward the rear of the gathering. The hypnotist spotted him at once, his dark eyes seeming to smolder.
"Perhaps," he said in a purring, mocking voice, "the one who interrupted is afraid to come up, but prefers to hide in the shadows and throw popcorn."
The culprit voiced a sudden exclamation and then pushed belligerently toward the platform. His appearance was not in any way remarkable. In fact, he somewhat resembled the first young man. Any casual observer would have placed them in the same farmer-laborer class, neither more nor less capable than the average. The second young man sat down in the platform chair with a distinct air of defiance, and for some minutes he fought visibly against the hypnotist's suggestion to relax. Presently, however, his aggressiveness disappeared, and he dutifully stared into the smoldering eyes opposite his own. In another minute or two, he rose at the hypnotist's command and lay flat on his back on the hard planks of the platform. The crowd gasped.
"You will fall asleep," the hypnotist told him. "You will fall asleep. You are falling asleep. You are falling asleep. You are asleep, and you will do anything which I command you to. Anything which I command you to do. Anything."
His voice droned on, repeating repetitious phrases, and the crowd grew perfectly silent. Suddenly, a new note entered the hypnotist's voice, and the audience became tense.
"Do not stand up, but rise from the platform,"
the hypnotist commanded.
"Rise from the platform."
His dark eyes became wild and luminous looking, and the crowd shivered.
"Rise!"
The crowd drew its collective breath with an audible start. The young man, lying rigid on the platform, without moving a muscle, began to ascend horizontally. He rose. He arose slowly, almost imperceptibly at first, but soon with a steady and unmistakable acceleration.
"Rise!"
the hypnotist's voice rang out. The young man continued to ascend until he was feet off the platform, and still he did not stop. The crowd was sure it was some kind of trick. But in spite of themselves, they stared, open-mouthed. The young man appeared to be suspended and moving through midair without any possible means of physical support. Abruptly, the focus of the crowd's attention was shifted. The hypnotist clasped a hand to his chest, staggered, and crumpled to the platform. There were calls for a doctor. The barker, in checkered suit, appeared from out of the tent and bent over the motionless form. He felt for a pulse. He shook his head and straightened up. Someone offered a bottle of whiskey, but he merely shrugged. Suddenly, a woman in the crowd screamed. Everyone turned to look at her, and a second later followed the direction of her gaze. Immediately there were further cries, for the young man whom the hypnotist had put to sleep was still ascending. While the crowd's attention had been distracted by the fatal collapse of the hypnotist, he had continued to rise. He was now a good 7 feet above the platform and moving inexorably upward. Even after the death of the hypnotist, he continued to obey that final ringing command, "Rise!" The barker, eyes all but popping out of his head, made a frantic leap upward, but he was too short. His fingers barely brushed the moving figure, and he fell heavily back to the platform. The rigid form of the young man continued to float upward, as if he were being hoisted by some sort of invisible pulley. The women began screaming hysterically. The men shouted. No one knew what to do. A look of terror crept over the face of the barker as he stared up. Once again, he glanced wildly toward the sprawled shape of the hypnotist. "Come down, Frank!
Come down!"
the crowd shrieked.
"Frank! Wake up!
Frank!
Stop! Frank!
Come down!" But the rigid form of Frank moved ever upward. Up, up, until he was level with the top of the carnival tent. Until he reached the tallest of the trees. Until he was past the trees and moved on into the soft moonlit sky of early October. Many in the crowd threw hands over horror-stricken faces and turned away. Those who continued to stare saw the floating form ascend into the night sky until it was nothing more than a tiny speck. Like a tiny little cinder drifting up near to the moon. Then it disappeared altogether.
This episode is brought to you by Samsung Galaxy. Here's the deal. Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 3 5G is everything you need in a phone and a tablet. It's two screens in one, an office, game room, and movie theater at the same time. The big, beautiful display unfolds endless possibilities and still folds closed to fit in a pocket. It's life-changing. So, show everyone how to live it. Get the new Galaxy Z Fold 3 5G at Samsung.com. 5G connection and availability may vary. Check with carrier.
The Mutual Audio Network. Listening and imagining together.
The following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance.
Storms come in all shapes and sizes. Striding through swollen puddles in a dismal downpour, Alan Austin, as nervous as a kitten, tumbled up a certain dark and creaky stairs in the neighborhood of Pell Street. Alan was the kind of man who always seemed about to tumble anywhere, everywhere, all at once. Through the curtain of rain, Alan peered for a long time on the dim landing before he found the name he wanted written obscurely on one of the doors. Down the crooked hallway, like an abandoned bowling lane with wooden floorboards once brightly polished, now as cancerous as an old man's leg, the last of the three sixes had long since fallen off, leaving a marred stain behind. He pushed open the apartment door, as he had been told to do, and found himself shaking and patting off the wet in his coat. He unfastened all the buttons, but didn't remove the coat, finding nowhere to hang it. The tiny room contained no furniture other than a plain kitchen table, a rocking chair, and an ordinary chair. A dozen bottles and jars sat on one of the shelves that were pressed against the dirty buff-colored walls. Sitting in the rocking chair, an old man, older than time itself, was reading a newspaper.
Excuse me?
Yes?
I was told that you can help me.
Yes?
Oh, right, the card. I have it right here.
I don't need it back, Alan. I'd rather new clients kept my cards. You never know when someone else might need my services or may require something different. And just as you've been given my calling card, you can provide it to them. Have a seat. Go ahead. Pull the chair over here from the card table.
Nice place you have here.
It serves its purposes.
Yeah, I don't mean to be rude.
Impossible. I value exactness, not tactness.
I had to have another look. You see, you said a card table, but to me that looks like a kitchen table. In fact, it looks a lot like the table I had as a child.
I suppose many things can have dual purposes. Maybe some people eat at such a table. I enjoy games of chance.
Oh, do you run a regular card game?
Of a sort.
Win often?
Games of chance are only truly fun when all the odds are stacked in the house's favor. But tell me, Alan, what brings you here?
Is it true?
True? I think you'll find truth is not an exact science. And I told you, I deal in exactness of all things.
Is it true that you have a certain mixture that has quite extraordinary effects?
My dear sir, my stock in trade is not very large. I don't deal in laxatives and teething mixtures. But such as it is, my aperitifs are varied. I think nothing I sell has effects which could be precisely described as ordinary.
Well, I mean, the fact is, I
here,
just...
for example. Here is a liquid as colorless as water. Almost tasteless. Quite imperceptible in coffee, wine, or any other beverage. It is also quite imperceptible to any known method of autopsy.
Do you mean it's a poison? Because I'm not looking for anything like that.
Call it a glove cleaner if you like. Maybe it'll clean gloves. I've never tried. One might call it a life cleaner. Lives need cleaning sometimes.
I want nothing of that sort.
So you say. Probably it's just as well. Do you know the price of this?
I couldn't imagine.
No, I'll bet you couldn't. For one teaspoonful of this intoxicant, which is sufficient, I ask $5,000. Never less.
What?
Not a penny less.
Well, I hope all your mixtures aren't as expensive. Or the man who gave me your card has wasted both of our times.
Oh, dear, no. It would be no good charging that sort of price for a love potion, for example. Young people who need a love potion very seldomly have $5,000. Otherwise, they wouldn't need a love potion.
You have no idea how glad I am to hear this.
I look at it this way. Please a customer with one item, and he'll come back when he needs another. Even if it is more costly. He will save up for it. If necessary.
So, you really do sell love potions?
If I did not sell love potions, I should not have mentioned the other matter to you. It is only when one is in a position to oblige that one can afford to be so confidential, after all. Ah, here it is.
These potions, they aren't just, you know...
Oh, no. Their effects are permanent and extend far beyond the mere casual impulse. But they include it. Oh, yes. They include it. Bountifully. Insistently. Everlastingly.
Dear me. Oh, how very exciting.
But consider the spiritual side.
Oh, I do. I do. I most certainly do, yes.
For indifference, the elixir substitutes devotion. For scorn, adoration. Give one tiny measure of this to the young lady. Its flavor is imperceptible in orange juice soup or cocktails. And however gay and giddy she is, she will change altogether. She will want nothing but solitude and you.
I can hardly believe it. She is so fond of parties.
Oh, she will not like them anymore. She will, in point of fact, be afraid of the pretty girls you may meet.
She will actually be jealous of me?
Yes. She will want to be everything to you.
Well, she is already, only she doesn't care about it.
Oh, she will when she has taken this. She will care intensely. You will be her sole interest in life.
Wonderful.
She will want to know all you do. All that has happened to you during the day. Every word of it. She will want to know what you are thinking about. Why you smile suddenly. Why you are looking so sad.
That is love.
Yes. How carefully she will look after you. She will never allow you to be tired, to sit in a draft, to neglect your food. If you are an hour late, she will be terrified. She will think you're killed. Or that some siren has caught you.
Oh, I can hardly imagine Diana like that.
Oh, you'll not have to use your imagination. And by the way, since there are always sirens, if by chance you should, later on, slip a little, you need not worry. She will forgive you. In the end, she'll be terribly hurt, of course, but she will forgive you in the end.
That will not happen.
Of course not. But if it did, you need not worry. She would never divorce you. Oh, no. And of course, she will never give you the least, the very least grounds for uneasiness.
And how much is this wonderful filter?
It is not as dear as the glove cleaner. Or life cleaner, as I sometimes call it. No. That is $5,000. Never a penny less. One has to be older than you are to indulge in that sort of thing. One has to save up for it.
But the love potion?
Oh, this? It's just a dollar.
Just a dollar?
That's what I said. And it's overpriced as it is.
Sold, dear sir, sold. I got 35, 60, 80, 95, 6, 7, 8, and 3 more pennies. Make a dollar. I can't tell you how grateful I am.
I like to oblige. Here. Don't drop it. I find that satisfied customers come back later in life when they are better off and want more expensive things. Remember, give this tiny vial. I know it doesn't look like much, but give it all to your young lady. Its flavor is imperceptible in orange juice soup or cocktails, and you will find it very effective.
Thank you. I'll be on my way. Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Exit Alan Austin, a man whose mission to this empty part of town is complete. A young man who never asked how the old man in the apartment knew his name and never once asked for his in return. Alan Austin, whose joy knows no bounds. Joy that is only momentarily forgotten as he flips his coat collar up to rebuff the gathering wind along the street. The rain has let up, but there are still storm clouds mounting in the distance. He doesn't understand why, but the dark clouds on the horizon give him a brief feeling of unease in his stomach, a passing shiver that is overwhelmingly drowned in his love for Diana. His Diana. A little skip in his gait, giddiness in his heart, and the certainty, oh, how certain he is, that he'll never return to this dingy street again.
You've just listened to The Chaser by John Collier. Audio adaptation written by Jack J. Ward. Post-produced and mixed by Scott Mosher, with original music by Sharon B. Starring Joe Stofko as the narrator, Jeffrey Adams as Alan Austin, and introducing Carlos Mendoza as the old man. The Chaser is a part of the Dark Musings anthology. This has been an Electric Vicuna production.
Hey everyone, it's Mark from Leap Audio. I'm here to tell you about something really exciting. July 24 through 26 of 2020, Halifax, Nova Scotia, we are gathering together in the world's first international modern audio drama convention and family reunion. Inspired in part by the living, loving memory of our dear friend Bill Holweg, we're bringing together writers, producers, actors, and our fans for workshops, seminars, and even live performances. So join us, won't you? Go to madcon.com. That's www.mad-con.com for more information. I hope to see you in Halifax in 2020.